I will open the Subcommittee on Natural Resources for March 4th, 2015. The item on the agenda is SB 5528, the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. Today is for public testimony. I believe Ms. Gilbert has an announcement also.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On OLIS for you members, under the March 3rd date, there is a compilation of displays showing the economic impact of state parks. It's called Senate Bill 5528, Agency Response to Member Questions.
We will open the public hearing. I will bring up two people at a time. Karen, I believe, Scroggin from Polk County. I probably mispronounced that. And Slater Smith. I can do that one. So. Yes, yes. And you can start in whichever order you want to start in, and just please identify yourself for the record when you begin.
Okay. First of all, I'm going to tell you that I'm hard of hearing. I've gotten older since I've lived here, so please bear with me in terms of answering your questions. I am just here as a member of the public.
Oh, can you identify yourself for the record?
Okay, my name is Karen Sjogren.
Sjogren.
Okay. It's a Swedish last name. And I'm here representing simply myself. I would like to point out, first of all, that I have gone to many of the state parks in Oregon, and I love them, and that's why I'm here. And I work seasonally as an employee at Silver Falls State Park in the capacity of collecting money. So I know how the public feels about paying for things, and I thought if you had any questions, you could ask me about that aspect of parks. I'm here basically in response to the article I read in the Statesman Journal yesterday about certain aspects of charging people for parks. And I don't know if that's in response to the bill that's before you, or am I in the wrong place at the wrong time?
Nope, please.
Okay. One of the things I wanted to talk about very briefly is the day use pass, which is currently $5 per vehicle coming into the park. I'd like that to stay at $5 rather than going up. It is actually hard for some people to pay that $5, and I would like to have the widest access possible to parks, and the more you raise the fees, the more you limit that. So $5, I think, is an appropriate day use fee. And I'd like to see the day use fee not imposed at most of the parks, first of all, because it's going to limit who comes to the parks, and it's also an administrative cost to collect that fee. Either you're going to pay somebody to do it, because you can't do it for free anymore. The host can't collect the money. It has to be a paid employee who takes that fee. Or you're going to have a machine that collects that money, and the machines break down, and it costs money to repair them. And also, they get vandalized, and they have to be replaced. So the money that's collected from a day fee does not necessarily go to maintaining the parks. A lot of the fee goes to the administrative cost. So I wanted to mention that. The second thing I wanted to say was, in terms of the paper noted that they were Parks was considering or is going to get rid of what's called the discovery season. In other words, you have a tiered campground fee right now. In other words, you pay a certain amount during what's the peak season, and then you pay a lesser fee during the shoulder season to attract more people into the park. And the idea is to get rid of the discovery lower fee, which I think is appropriate, because the fee is already low enough to begin with that I don't think having the same fee throughout the season would be a hardship, and I don't think it would keep people out of the parks. What keeps people out of camping is the weather, various other things. I mean, Silver Falls is heavily used, as the campground is heavily used anyway. So I wanted to make that point. And the last thing I wanted to say was, in terms of trying to bring value-added services into the park in order to make money, I'm really, really hesitant about that. You don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. The mission for those parks is to preserve the natural resources and historical value of those parks, and I'm mostly concerned about the natural resources. You have to be really careful if you add something like disc golf or zip line was mentioned in the paper, that is compatible with the natural resources of that park, because what's bringing people into those parks is the natural resources, you know, the trees, the creeks, whatever you want to talk about. And we get people I work at Silver Falls State Park. We get people from all over the world coming into that park, and that's what they're there to see. You know, the the gift shop and all that are nice, but they're basically there to see the natural resources, and that which you, in terms of revenue enhancement, that's really what you need to focus on, is preserving the natural resources, because that is the core mission of the parks anyway, and the parks are supported by public money through the lottery, not through the state general fund, but through the lottery. That's a huge part of their budget, and so the parks are managed in the public trust. In other words, the public entrusts that us with that money to manage the parks wisely so that the natural resources are preserved. You see other areas, the natural resources going, they're simply fading away in other areas as we become urbanized, and so the parks are becoming, just like the federal parks, they're becoming more important as a reservoir for natural resources, whether it's fish or wildlife or botanical resources or so forth. So that's the extent of my testimony. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Well, we'll go to Mr. Smith first, and then we'll see if there are any questions for this panel. Mr. Smith.
Thank you. My name is Slater Smith. I'm going to be talking about some projects I've been doing with Oregon State Parks over the last couple years as an independent artist and musician. We have a video queued up, and I think that would probably be the best intro to kind of explain my relationship with visuals. But we put this out a couple years ago here. So
let me go back over Oregon. That little scar is nothing in the arms of all the things have yet to come. I'd like to call it no big deal, but we both know I'd be lying. I can never come back if I don't go. Whoa. That plan may have been a waste, but it doesn't mean it wasn't nice. Sometimes you use a sweet lie to get by. Though it's done me well, this place where there's a mountain, there's a sky. There's too much left between to ease my mind. From where we got flowers by the fifth, where we learned backhanded love. Where if you come off clever enough, you don't have to cover anything up. And this city's done me strange, though I'm as courageous as I can. And that courage sure is honest, but can feel like such a fickle thing. Let me go back over Oregon. That little scar is nothing in the arms of all the things have yet to come. I'd like to call it no big deal, but we both know I'd be lying. I can never come back if I don't go. Whoa. Well, explain to me this affinity for name and all those settlements, things that crop up colorful in spite of all the clouds. Like you know it's there, but don't look down. There's a perfect place that's not quite now. And Jesus has a lot of love, but the good book might not let you out. Let me go back over Oregon. That little scar is nothing in the arms of all the things have yet to come. I'd like to call it no big deal, but we both know I'd be lying. I can never come back if I don't go. And that plan may have been a waste, but we'll make it up sometime. I'll find you when we've grown apart enough. Where there's a candle, there's a light. A shadow dances right behind, singing, come to me, son, let me test your luck. From where we got flowers by the fifth, where we learned backhanded love. Where if you come off clever enough, You don't have to cover anything up, and this city's done me strange, though I'm as courageous as I came. And that courage sure is honest, but can feel like such a fickle thing. And explain to me this affinity for naming all those settlements, for things that crop up colorful in spite of all the clouds. From the roses city of my birth, the golden man stands in a cherry town, to a road stop named for mountains and women and their family ties and flowers by the fifth. In spite of all, in spite of all, in spite of all the clouds. Let me go back over Oregon. That little scar is nothing in the arms of all the things I have yet to come. Like to call it no big deal, but we both know I'd be lying. I can never come back if I don't go.
So that's an introduction. So State Parks invited me here to come talk and show this video and sort of talk about some of the work I've been doing with them over the last couple of years and what the parks have come to mean to me. So they were gracious enough to support me in helping create that project. And what you just saw was visuals of all the state parks that I could find on public maps, using the online maps and the map that they had in their booklet. And so I spent 2 summers ago going all over the state to every single state park and seeing them all. And it was this idea that I sort of had because I'd lived in Oregon my entire life. Grew up in Central Oregon, went to college across the street, and now I live in Portland and play music in a band. And I had this idea to take this song that I'd written around the state to all these places. And when I started thinking of how to do that, I ended up landing on Oregon State Parks. And I'm really glad I did. I had a great opportunity to see the entire state and see what all the parks have to offer. And it was just really an amazing experience for me, and I wanted to continue it in a way and bring it to other people and maybe do another project. So what we've been working on this last summer is I wanted to do something more collaborative that also connected arts to the parks, but it wasn't just me, because as you saw in that video, it's just 185 shots of me. So what I did is we ended up going to parks and creating this project, bringing Oregon bands to the parks to do live, video sessions in the parks of them performing. And I'd seen a lot of takeaway sessions, but not, and when I say takeaway sessions, I mean kind of online videos, of bands playing music in somebody's living room or in somebody's studio or in the forest somewhere. And these things had become very popular online, but I hadn't seen a series that had the kind of narrative that I was thinking about, where not only do you have a bunch of bands playing in unique places, but there's this story that connects them. And so what I ended up doing is putting a team together and bringing a bunch of bands that you'd normally never see play in these spaces to spaces that would normally never have music. To this extent, so it was amplified bands. We tried to do a big variety of different sounds to kind of the hippest indie rock sounding thing you could find, to, you know, a more bluegrassy act, and it turned out really great. And I'm excited to say that it looks like OPB will be releasing these videos in the next couple months, probably with some talk on the radio about it and then on their online YouTube channel. So I just wanted to come here and talk about how excited I am for these sorts of opportunities that we can do this in the parks. I'm excited about this video series because I think it reaches a whole different demographic of people. You know, there's a lot of young people living in Portland and moving to the state, but this was an interesting opportunity to connect sort of that youth culture and that music culture to these spaces that have come to mean a lot to me after I've, you know, gone and seen them and bonded with them over the last couple of years. So that's what I have to say. Do you have any questions for me?
Any questions? I only have one. How long was that video?
Oh, how long was the video? I want to say the song is about 4.5 minutes. It took about three, four months
okay.
to film.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Any additional questions? Yes,
I just have a comment. Thank you, Chair. I just want to say nice job.
Oh,
love what
you.
You're doing. Brave.
Thank
way
you.
To think outside the box. Yeah, nice work. I watched the video beforehand, and it was great. And today, again, it's great. And I can't wait to see what you put out on OPB. So, nice
Thank
job.
You.
Thank you.
You.
Could I add something? I'm not used to doing this, and I forgot a couple of points. Would you just indulge me? One of the other concerns I have about who comes to the parks is we have a number of group facilities at Silver Falls that are used by school groups. We also have the Y Camp, which you're probably already aware of. And we've already doubled the fees for what's called the ranches. The ranches are a dormitory-type situation where it's currently $200 a night based on 25 people occupancy, which comes to $8 a person. And those facilities, the new ranch and the old ranch, and there are probably other group facilities in the state, but I'm just talking about what I'm most familiar with. And, of course, the Y Camp is used primarily by the Y during the summer and then by other groups during different types of the year, but it's quite expensive. I'm concerned about the fees rising to the point where the school groups will not be able to use, for example, the ranches. It's currently $200 a night. It was $100 a night before. And I want the fees to stay within range for those types of users because I think they're really, really important. The school groups, the young children, so they can have an exposure to the outdoor world. We used to have outdoor school in this state, and now that's sort of gone by the wayside. And I just want to emphasize that it's important to have it available at a fee that groups can afford. The other thing I forgot to say, which is sort of in line with what the young man here is saying, one way to increase revenues for the parks is to use them, bring different groups in, as he was referring to, but also to spread out the time period in which the parks are used. And this was mentioned in the article. One of the things that we've done at Silver Falls is we have a marathon, half marathon in early November, and that brings a lot of people into the park at a time when the park would otherwise perhaps not have that visitorship because kids are back in school and so forth. So that's a good way to broaden the revenue, increase the revenues to broaden the time period in which people use the park. So thank you for indulging me. I forget to say those
okay.
two things.
Any additional questions? Yes, Senator Denbrough.
Thanks, Senator Devlin. I very much enjoyed your video. And I'm wondering, first of all, so did you perform the entire song at each of those sites and then it was edited down?
Yeah, and that was sort of part of the grander story for me in my head, the more personal off-camera thing that was, I had lived here my whole life. And I like the idea of playing not only these songs for this music video, but by playing this song within the state to the state in all of its spaces around it. I performed it all the way through in all those locations. There's also members of the band. I usually play in a larger band, and so we had everybody in the band at the time show up to all the spots. And then we kind of pick the magical moments to edit together in the final video.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Follow
yes.
up? And, you know, I can't... So... our witness, mentioned sort of the educational values of the parks, and I think that your video really could be very useful for schools, actually, you know, as they're teaching Oregon geography.
Yeah.
That may say, I don't know if you thought about that, but, you know, I think as a sort of, you know, a way of, you know, very quickly getting a sense of the really various geography we have in this state, and then take off on that in various sub-themes and little research projects, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you mind if I respond to that? I absolutely agree with you. I've actually had people reach out to me before already, whether it's online or just anecdotally, who are teachers, saying, "Oh, you know, I love your song. I'm gonna show it to my class and have them do a creative writing piece based on that." Or I know at least twice it's been mentioned to me. So I don't think you're far off the mark there.
Thank you both. Thank you both for coming. The next two people will be Stephanie Redman and Tom Wolf. Please proceed and identify yourself for the record.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Morning, Coach R. Devlin, Coach R. Rayfield, subcommittee members and staff. My name is Stephanie Redman. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Recreation and Park Association, or ORPA as we abbreviate it. We are a 60-year-old 501c3 nonprofit organization that supports park and recreation agencies and professionals throughout the state, primarily by providing education, advocacy, and networking services. We have 104 member organizations and approximately pushing close to about 1,000 members across Oregon at this point. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning to encourage your support and passage of Senate Bill 5528 in support of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. I've already submitted a letter of testimony, which I believe you already have, in support of this bill. But I'd like to highlight some additional reasons why I think the agency and our members think the agency is worthy of a full appropriation, or actually even more, as that has been defined in the bill. I've been fortunate in my career to have the opportunity to work with multiple state agencies across the country, and I can tell you that OPRD is far and away one of the most professional and dedicated organizations that I've had the pleasure to work with. State Parks is a close partner of the Oregon Park and Recreation Department, and their staff is deeply committed to their work and to serving Oregonians in a way that I think is unprecedented for many state agencies across the country. Lisa Van Lannen and her leadership team are committed to innovation and to ensuring that OPRD, State Parks, and the entire department remains relevant to Oregon and Oregonians for years to come. The department, especially State Parks, is an outstanding partner to local park and recreation agencies as well, whether those be at the municipal level, the county level, regional, or even special park districts. OPRD regularly engages our other member agencies to provide input into its operations, its programs, and its plans, to collaborate on various activities that the department holds, and to share knowledge, even equipment, from time to time, to ensure efficiencies of operation between collaborative park and recreation agencies. OPRD also supports our association, very pleased to say, in our annual conference in a variety of ways, ensuring that park and recreation staff across the state and their volunteers are current on techniques that are being employed by the department, new programs and resources that the agency might offer, and more. They are very cooperative and supportive in providing speakers, in leading sessions and site tours for our participants, in helping to plan educational events, and lending other resources as well. And this all helps to ensure a top quality conference. We like to think of it as the premier educational event for parks and recreation participants, again, volunteers and staff primarily, of more than 300 Oregonians each year. Of course, the department's local government grants are also invaluable, and I'm sure you're well aware of those, but I'd be remiss if I didn't thank the state for that local support of our park and recreation agencies as well. Beyond all of that, the department's work really is part of what makes Oregon, Oregon. It's virtually impossible to imagine our great state without our state parks, without our historic sites and programs, or many of the local park and recreation facilities that are funded in part by OPRD. well, passage of Senate Bill 5528 and its appropriation ensure that we won't have to face that terrible prospect, fortunately. I respectfully say to the subcommittee that state support for parks and recreation at all levels in Oregon could be and should be stronger than it is. Our state parks, from coast to canyons, are really iconic symbols of Oregon and what we represent. They support better health and wellness for our residents. They're economic generators for our state. And the parks and recreation industry, when combined with the public and private sectors, provides positive employment for thousands of Oregonians, whether that's a first-year lifeguard, someone who's a living wage maintenance worker, environmental educators, summer camp providers, and even the hundreds of private sector employees that provide ancillary support services to our parks and recreation programs and agencies across the state, landscape designers, equipment suppliers, concessionaires, legal services, and other fields as well. Simply put, parks and recreation in Oregon is an essential part of Oregon's quality of life and the physical, mental, and economic health for our residents. Yet public resources for these treasured sites and programs continue to be challenged at state and local levels. You know OPRD's budget challenges of decreasing lottery and RV funds and other funding challenges as well. These are true at the municipal and county levels also, and I'm sure many of our agencies have been in touch with you from the local perspective to share those challenges and frustrations. All of our parks and recreation agencies in Oregon must balance that narrow line between strong demand, fortunately strong demand, for services and facilities from the public with limited public resources. Even our park districts, which are generally viewed as having more supportive and flexible funding, have extensive wish lists, deferred maintenance lists, and backlogs that number in the millions of dollars of need represented locally. And incidentally, local agencies will be even more financially challenged if they're required to fund sick leave for all employees as well as expanded minimum wage, especially with our many seasonal and part-time employees that are employed at our local park and recreation agencies. But I digress a bit. The point is that ORPA firmly believes that the state of Oregon should be investing more in both Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, as well as park and recreation resources for the entire state and programs throughout Oregon. And that is why we anticipate bringing forward a concept and request in 2016 that will identify and suggest additional revenues to support some of the finest park and recreation systems, agencies, and assets in the nation. So more to come on that, but in the meantime, I want to thank you for your support of parks and recreation at all levels throughout Oregon and strongly encourage passage of Senate Bill 5528. Thank you for your consideration. I'd be happy to address any questions or after the session, invite you to contact myself or Cindy Robert, our lobbyist, with any questions or if we may provide any additional information. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Wolf, and then we'll go to questions.
Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Rayfield, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, the largest cold water conservation group in the United States. Here representing our 3,000 members here in Oregon and 150,000 members across the nation. And I was looking at that video that the young man shared, and I will attempt to do the same thing to talk about my user group, not using music, but using prose as my canvas. And my group, even though we're conservationists, are fishermen. And state parks provide two things for us. They provide protection for habitat, such as Cottonwood State Park, which now protects some of the best habitat for summer steelhead in the nation. And it also provides a place that people can stay at as we fish and recreate. So there's important. So I ask that you support the state parks budget, and I have a couple key points to make. Number one, on O list, you'll see something that Jim Myron said in, but I just wanted to address to the salmonberry process. There are several fish groups, although we support the process, we have some concerns, and I hope you have a chance to look at that letter and see our concerns about, because the salmonberry is the premier wild steelhead river on the north coast, and whereas we think there should be access provided for recreationists to hike and trail, we have great concerns about some of the things that could be put in there, like trains and a really highly paved trail because it could have a major impact on the steelhead habitat that's found in there. You know, you can go there during the winter and catch 20-pound steelhead. It's an amazing stream. So I won't go any further into that. The letter covers it rather much better than I would. And make sure that when we support that they're going to take a 2-year hiatus from acquiring parks, but speaking as a Washington County resident, we desperately need more parks in this state. You know, we got Stubbs Stewart in Washington County. It's the only place in Washington County you can go and camp now. We need more places like that. Third, fixing small parks. My favorite state park is Minim State Park, which most of you probably have no idea where it's at. It's found at the confluence of Minim River and Wallowa River and provides a place to put in if you want to drift down and drift on the Grand Ron and have a 3-to-5 trip down there. It provides access to some of the best trout fishing and steelhead fishing in the West. It's a great park, but it needs desperately to be improved because, frankly, it's fallen apart. So I asked that the state parks that be given sufficient money to look at the small parks to be able to fix them, to upgrade them, so that people like I can go there and enjoy our experience there and have a place that is improved so we can camp and bring money into the local economy. We also ask that state parks continue to work on their coordination with county parks so that people can have a clear idea of parks in this place, because there's many great county parks that some people aren't aware of. So if there's any way that state parks can continue to coordinate so that there can be a list of all parks in Oregon that people can access, that would be great. And lastly, I'd like to thank state parks for Cottonwood State Park. As I mentioned it earlier, it's a great park. I was out there last November fishing for steelhead, not catching steelhead, but fishing for steelhead. Spent 3 or 4 days out there, stayed at a little hotel in Washco. And other people were staying in hotels in Condon, and we put a lot of money into the economy, so state parks are a great place for people to stay, to put money into the economy. So we continue to ask that you fund those state parks, that you help them have enough money to carry out their mission, to acquire new parks, and to restore the parks they already have. I just want to commend state parks for the great job they're doing in our state, and ask that this budget be passed, and if anything else, more money be given to them. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you both very
thank
much.
Thank you.
The next two parties up are Peter Moore and Peggy Lynch.
I'm here all the time. Go ahead.
And if you would please identify yourself for the record and proceed whichever order you decide to.
Well, on Ms. Lynch's insistence, I will go first. My father's probably somewhere kicking me from behind right now. So my name is Peter Moore, last name spelled M-O-H-R. I'm an attorney with Jordan Ramis. I'm not here as a lawyer. Okay? I am, good morning to the chair, co-chairs Devlin and co-chair Rayfield and members of the committee. I'm the chairman of the board for the Oregon State Parks Foundation. And so that is why I'm before you today. I will keep my comments short and brief. Chair Devlin, you may have seen on the list there, assuming you have that in front of you, I crossed myself off as neutral on this bill, which might come as a little odd to you, saying this is the Oregon State Parks Foundation. Just some very quick comments. I'm here to sort of describe, well, to describe our role of our relationship with the Oregon State Parks Department. We are not a source of funding for the Oregon State Parks Department. We are a source of funding for projects which preserve and further enhance the park's values, all the benefits that state parks provide to the public, and to sort of act as you know, where the road ends for state parks, that's where we pick up. We engage ourselves in projects to just simply further enhance those benefits for the benefit of the public's use. Traditionally speaking, some of you are familiar with the organization, used to be called the Oregon State Parks Trust. The foundation's been around since 1995. It's been pretty much a capital campaign foundation where literally a project would come along, we'd ramp up, we'd look to raise funds, and then that project would be over, and then the lights would go off, we'd ramp down, and then we'd show up for the next time that money was needed for any particular state parks project. We are in a period of transition. Since 1995, the foundation has contributed in the neighborhood of $8.5 million to a variety of projects on state parks. Kamwa Chung is an example. Vista House is an example. Some of the lighthouses on the coast, projects where we've come in to literally provide necessary funds to enhance a variety of resources on state parks. Today, we are becoming a different type of organization in the sense that we are no longer going to be limited to doing capital campaigns. Mr. Wolf mentioned, of course, Cottonwood Canyon, that being a recent addition to the state park system. We are very much a player in the evolution of that site. And we are working with a variety of people, individuals, organizations, Eastern Oregon University, local schools out there, the local Chamber of Commerce out there, and various other partners to also enhance the value of that park for purposes of public access, looking at projects to provide facilities which will allow for educational opportunities at Cottonwood Canyon State Parks, things of that nature, just in summary fashion. We, of course, also, though our broader footprint is we're looking also to address, and this is where we now go shift out of the more the traditional capital campaign format, we are looking to increase environmental literacy throughout the state by virtue of using the resources on state parks, as well as we are looking to enhance socioeconomic access. A variety of different, you know, not only is it various different communities which traditionally don't access state parks, but also concerns of economic ability to attend and participate at state parks. So the foundation is now, as you can tell, moving more towards an organization that is sort of a multi-pronged set of responsibilities. A lot of this has obviously been generated by the passage of SB 196 back in the 2013 session. Since the passage of that bill, as you all may know, allows for a unique relationship between state parks and a nonprofit organization. And so the foundation has gone through that process. Rules were promulgated under that bill to allow for an agreement to be then executed between state parks and the foundation. And that agreement has long since been brought to completion, and that is what we're pursuing right now in our efforts to enhance state parks. A few comments. Mr. Smith, I thought his video was nothing short of phenomenal. I think it was just a great representation, and I think it's a great message to, and to be honest, to people in the metro area. We have recently begun a membership campaign for the foundation. Historically, the foundation has not had a membership component. That started just this past fall. Already we're at nearly 500 members. Okay. There is some sincere interest out there in what we do. And I just thought that Mr. Smith, I just want to make a comment there. I thought his video was terrific. And to Senator Denbrough's comment, I think that's type of the communication and media materials, I think, would be very beneficial to keep that up for purposes of getting that message out there. The reason why I also mentioned that is because when you look at the demographic of the membership that we've already produced in an incredibly short period of time, most of those members are outside the metro area. Most of those members are where the state parks are located, because those are the people who know the parks, who have ready access to the parks. And so one of the things that we are going to be looking to do as well is try to bring in a greater message into the metro area for the benefit of the public and state parks. There are a variety of things that we're going to be going forward on within the next year to 2 years. I would just like a final quick comment. It's been working with the State Parks Department has been terrific. This is a new relationship, obviously, for the foundation and state parks. Lisa Van Lannen, MG Devereaux, Chris Hovel, and others within state parks have been terrific partners as we try to go and really enhance state parks and pursue the projects that we think are material to the benefit of the public. The whole idea of this socioeconomic approach, as well as environmental literacy, is something that's very challenging, but also we're very excited about. We would not become the folks operating those programs. We are simply looking to gain exposure for these approaches, design these approaches, gain money and support for those approaches, but we would then be working with additional partners. The foundation has no desire to go and try to wear 10 different hats and try to go into spaces where other people have much greater expertise. So that is sort of, that's the quick synopsis, big picture of where the foundation is, our relationship with state parks. And after Ms. Lynch speaks, I'd be happy to answer any questions you all may have. Thank you.
Ms. Lynch.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon, co-chairs, members of the committee. You have my letter on OLIS. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages informed and active participation in government. In 1999, the League adopted a comprehensive position on parks. And you can read the in italics a little subset of what that position says. The Oregon Parks and Recreation System is a crown jewel of Oregon state government. And frankly, it was obvious because it's the most animated I have seen this committee related to an agency budget. Each of you had something to say, some questions to ask, and interests in our state park system. And so for those of us who also support our state parks, that was very heartwarming. We are concerned about the divestment of some state properties, and you will note some of our concerns, not only that the fact that some of those small parks may provide access to yet another asset, or exist to provide an unimpeded view of some spectacular place. We also note that you need to, that the parks will need to note how those properties came about, how did they receive them, are there deed restrictions, are there some other kinds of restrictions before they become something else. We're concerned about the limited dollars set aside for acquisition of new properties. In 2007, we were a part of the group that actually advocated for purchasing more parks to be sure that we had parks for populations to come, for my grandchildren and others. I appreciated your first testifier who talked about day use permits and her concern about making sure that we maintain access for all Oregonians to our state parks in some ways. We respect the fact that camping fees need to be in line with the market, and that's okay. But we really do want to make sure that our state parks are still available to every group. And I was pleased to hear that the foundation is going to be working, sounds like, in some manner to address that. I note the local economy's benefit. I just quickly glanced at what was provided to you as a response to yesterday's testimony. A 1-to-32 ratio is not a bad return on investment. So for every dollar spent on state parks, if there's 32 plus bucks going in the local economy, I think that we're doing a good job. And that's something that you need to consider as you continue to support this. We understand the change in demographics and activity changes, but I also want to remind you all that baby boomers have another 20 years to enjoy the parks, and so we want to make sure that as we look to the future, we don't, and as we recognize this downturn in the economy, we don't change, or we take a look at the opportunities for all. We're very concerned about the state scenic waterways program. We had understood that they were going to be moving forward after the 2013 session. They actually did do some work related to that. Two of our local leagues actually supported designations of small sections of the Malawa and the Chetco. I understand they are sort of moving forward, but the designation did not happen. They're looking for supporters or proponents to be able to support that. The State Scenic Waterways Program is in ORS, and we hope that the park system will continue to do it. We will note the effects on climate change. I won't get into that. But I do want to say a couple of other things. Our concern, we followed the issue about moving some recreation fees, RV license fees, to the county park system. We understand that both are complementary, but we understood that they were supposed to be working on operational functions, marketing and management of those properties, not just transferring my property for your property. And so we're hopeful that these new recreational coalitions are going to actually look at that, so that a person cleaning the toilets at a county park can go over to the state park and clean those toilets right next door and create some efficiencies. And lastly, we're concerned about the agreement with the Oregon State Parks and the Oregon State Parks Foundation. Agreement calls for a 25% administration fee for donations received, 25% being kept by the foundation. And although I am pleased to hear the expansion of their mission and the expansion of the work they're doing, 25% seems a bit excessive for the administration, and people donating need to be aware that that's the case. It's a state agency. People can actually donate directly to the state of Oregon. And with that, be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any question for Mr. Moore or Ms. Lynch?
Yes, Senator Hansel.
Quick question for Mr. Moore. I appreciate your presentation, the big picture, and the relationship to the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. I think it was very proactive and forward-thinking. So I probably missed it, but why is the foundation neutral?
Why is the foundation neutral? Well, we're focused on a role which enhances state parks. We certainly would like to see the parks get what they need from the legislature in any budget. Sure, that's fine. I think it's also, we don't want to be perceived as, we are a foundation, we're an independent body. And it's not that we don't support parks and everything that they do, or what they need to do, or what they want to ask for. But we also think it's important because, you know, state parks, there are a variety of different people throughout the state of Oregon, outside the state of Oregon, who enjoy Oregon state parks. And we want to be seen as simply a resource to enhance that value and focus on that. We are, because of our relationship with state parks, we have an agreement with state parks. You know, for a lot of people, reality is based on 80% of perception. And people may say, oh, you just want to go and advocate for state parks budget because you think that benefits you. We think it's more appropriate to say, look, we support state parks and what they do, but we think it's appropriate to say, look, we are an independent body of state parks, and our mission is dedicated wholly to benefiting state parks. But we also want to be aware of the fact that, you know, people make assumptions about what may or may not be appropriate, and so we would just like to keep a nice clean line and say, look, we support this, we would support the bill, but at the same time, we want to make sure that we're treated as an independent body and someone doesn't say, oh, well, they're an advocate for this bill simply because they think that that benefits the foundation. So we're just trying to play sort of a neutral role from that perspective. It is nothing more than that. Does that answer your question, Senator Hansel?
I can see why you're a lawyer.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough.
And I'm not sure it answers the question at all. I think, but I'll take it at face value.
We support the bill, Senator Hansel, but we just don't take an active role because of our relationship. I think it's unique. We want to try to respect that.
Any additional questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you. Oh, yes, Representative Hack.
Thank you, Co-Chair. So can you explain a little bit about what was brought up about the 25%?
Sure. As a matter of course, and it's my understanding for a lot of NGOs, that range for administrative costs typically is somewhere between 20 to 30%. So we think that's probably within a relative range. I think the other thing that we have to take into consideration and in response to Ms. Lynch's comments is you have to realize this foundation historically has been a capital campaign organization. So you got a project, we ramp up, we go out, we get that money, and then we disappear until the next project comes along and State Parks says, okay, fine, we need Vista House, we'd have to do a renovation campaign, whatever it is. So as we transition into this broader footprint to try to enhance the public benefit that can be obtained from the use of State Parks, we are looking at, you know, it's a growth scenario we have here in terms of what is required of us. We have 8 subcommittees on our board. We have been building our board for the last 2 years. We have 12 members on our board of directors from all facets of all variety of different areas of expertise. It is a very, very active board. We have a staff of 2. And so we are literally shifting the scope of the foundation and its role literally, by all accounts, overnight. And so, you know, there is going to be some costs associated with just building that quote-unquote infrastructure in the foundation. I think the other thing that also is important to note is when you make a donation to the foundation, that can be a restricted donation where someone makes a donation to the foundation. They say, look, all we are doing is we just want this money to go to this project. We also have a disclosure obligation where we actually identify, look, such a percentage of any donation is going to be dedicated to X, or could be as much as this amount dedicated to administrative costs. So we're very clear about how all of that operates. Yes.
Yes.
I think this is probably a conversation that should be had away from here, and I think maybe a little attention or some more thought about your foundation would be good for myself, at least, to this just will prompt some more research on my end, but I don't know that that's a time for this here in this committee. So thank you for indulging me, co-chair, and we'll have a conversation at another time. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Any additional questions? Seeing none, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Amanda Rich. And if there's anyone else who hasn't testified who wishes to testify. And I'll give the director a chance to close after this if she has any closing comments.
So. Thanks.
Yes, Ms. Rich.
Good morning, co-chairs Devlin and Rayfield and members of the committee. My name is Amanda Rich, and I am the Director of State Government Relations for the Nature Conservancy in Oregon. And I am pleased to have the opportunity to testify in support of the department and Senate Bill 5528 and their budget today. The Nature Conservancy in Oregon has a long history of partnership with and support for OPRD, and our missions intersect and overlap in many ways as we seek to conserve the lands and waters on which all life depends, and OPRD works to provide and protect outstanding natural, scenic, cultural, historical, historic, and recreational sites for the enjoyment and education of present and future generations. You can see that we have set small tasks for ourselves as organizations. I'd like to talk a little bit today about stewardship and the role that it plays both in Oregon and the role that State Parks plays in creating the next generation of stewards. I believe that a robust and geographically diverse, accessible park system is critical and a foundational element of a thriving, healthy Oregon and our success as a state. Stewardship and protection of natural resources is deeply embedded in the psyche of Oregon. And I think those values have served us well over time. We have spectacular, pristine natural areas. We have a thriving agricultural industry, and we have exceptional hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. And, you know, you'll see this, and we struggle amongst ourselves to balance all of those interests. But if we rise above those internecine battles or conversations and take an aerial view, I think you would say that we've done a pretty good job in Oregon of protecting our natural resources and having a lovely and beautiful Oregon for all to enjoy. But if we fail to maintain and cultivate that ethic of stewardship among an expanding and increasingly urbanized and screen-obsessed population, if I may, I think we risk losing part of what makes Oregon special. So that brings me back to the critical nature of a well-developed park system. We really have to work to provide people of all ages and backgrounds to meet them where they are and provide them with access to outdoor experiences that give them that tangible, personal experience that allows them to come to their own understanding of the value of Oregon's natural bounty and to develop their own brand of stewardship through which they can act to protect the Oregon that we all know and love. In past biennia, we've usually come before you and focused primarily on supporting the acquisition program, and it's no different today. We do support that program, and we like to see it at a level where State Parks is able to take advantage of opportunities as they come before them in terms of procuring strategically important sites. And, you know, I'm not sure that this acquisition budget really meets that quote-unquote readiness standard, but we're prepared to take a leap of faith along with the department. We understand the reasoning behind why how this budget came together, and we understand the desire to take a pause. We understand the resources that are available to them, and so what we hope is that if one of those strategically important sites becomes available, that we can come together as a community and draw upon the collective resources that we have as local, state, federal, and private partners to help secure that site and take advantage of that opportunity. So in closing, no, this isn't a perfect budget. I think that probably all of us would say, and I think you've heard a lot of people say it would be great to have them have more, but we really do support the department in its effort and desire to maintain its existing level of high quality service while it plans the best way to organize, invest, to meet the challenge of connecting a growing and changing population of Oregonians to the outdoors. So,
any questions? Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and thank you, Ms. Rich, for being here today and for all the Conservancy does. You touched on the goal of encouraging all people of all ages and backgrounds to develop their own understanding of our heritage. And I know you heard testimony over the last couple of days of the challenge of state parks in trying to attract a new generation of users of our natural bounty. I think you used the word the screen obsession. And that may have been a reference to exactly what we're talking about here. Does the Conservancy have any insights into how we accomplish this goal of educating and attracting a new generation?
Co-Chairs Devlin and Rayfield, Representative Gomberg, that is a big question, and I wish I had the answer for you. And frankly, ironically, since I did mention screen obsession, I think that having folks watch the video that we saw earlier, in fact, I wanted to cede my time to watching the video again. I liked it that much. But I do think that I don't have a silver bullet to offer to you, but I do think, again, that trying to meet people where they are and providing that local accessible experience, that local park that might be the gateway to another park experience, I think having that takes them a little further away. So that kid who hasn't been to the beach yet can get out to their local park and get excited about being outside, and then hopefully we can provide them with an opportunity to go further, and having interpretive programs that are right next door, frankly, and that show folks that nature is right beside you. It's not something that is a remote concept or a remote thing. It is, it's all around us. So I'm not being particularly articulate in my answer, but I think that I think we have to work to meet folks where they are.
Well, I thank you for a good answer to a big question. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Any additional questions? Oh, and by the way, Ms. Rich, virtually every group, every individual that talks to me wants more.
Yes. Yes.
So that's not unique.
I don't think I've ever seen a perfect budget.
Yes, yes, Co-Chair Devlin and Co-Chair Rayfield and members, we are all Oliver Twist with our hands out saying more, please. And I do not envy you the task that you have before you. But thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll give you an opportunity, Ms. Van Lanen, if there's anything you want to say or just wish the committee well.
I don't know that I can say anything that would be helpful. Good morning, for the record. Lisa Van Lanen, Director at Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, Co-Chair Rayfield, Devlin, members of the committee, Ms. Gilbert. First and foremost, I want to thank everyone in the room for the support. As you can see, there is a lot of support positions and passion for what we do here in Oregon, and I know that everyone asks you for more. We're not asking for more. We're not asking to raise fees. We're not asking to do any of those things. But the beauty in what I see in this room and the work that I've got to do this last year is the passion that is there, which is going to equal partnership and collaboration. And you've heard many of them say that they're ready to step to the table. So I think it's a great opportunity for us to figure out how to evolve and come together to collaborate, to do more with less, and actually enhance our partnerships across the board. So with that, I don't have anything I really need to add. Happy to share more about the agency as we go through the budget process or answer any questions, and give you back the gift of time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Colleagues, this closes our public hearing on parks. Tomorrow, I believe you will have OWEB up on both Thursday and next Monday, and then we will go to the Division of State Lands on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So with that, we're concluded. Thank you all.
With some language and have me mess with some